Good evening, everybody. We will call the Thursday, what is it, January 16th meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Can we have a roll call, please? Is it the 15th?
Yes.
We're going to share microphones today.
Harmonize.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Jessica Earnshaw. Stephen Gregory.
Here.
James Santana.
Here.
Duan Tran.
Here.
Vicki Williams.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Are there any revisions to the agenda?
None that I'm aware of. Okay.
Appearance requests?
Not right now.
Announcements?
Nope.
Okay. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the Planning Commission and Planning Board meeting on December 18th?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting from the Planning Commission on December 18th, 2014.
Can I have a second?
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion on the planning and zoning minutes from last meeting? I read them over. They seem to be accurate to me. Hearing none?
None.
All in favor of approving the minutes from the planning and zoning meeting of December 18th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. All right, the minutes are approved. Public hearing items. We have no public hearing items. Regular meeting items. Number six is the receipt of planning authority approval of resolution 2014-25 for the Parkside Estates subdivision revision 1, a re-subdivision of lot 1, Parkside Estates subdivision.
I'll speak to this one.
Okay, is any...
There's no action required on this.
Okay, great.
So this is just staff reporting that we approved resolution 2014-25 on December 18th, and there's a copy of it in the packet. This was an abbreviated plat. We've gone through a few of these in the past few months, so it's kind of the standard procedure. For the abbreviated plats, we approve them in the planning office during the day rather than coming to the Planning Commission.
I don't know if the audience can hear a word that we're saying. Is there?
I'm not sure if the microphones are working.
I don't know either, but I noticed this at the council meeting the other night, too, where I was sitting and I couldn't hear a word.
Yeah.
Well, mine works, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
maybe it just needs to be closer.
It's
I don't
recording.
Know.
It should be recording. It looks like it's being recorded there.
Okay. If you could speak up a little bit for us older folks, or this older folk up here, I need to be able to hear.
Huh?
Thank you.
So this is a abbreviated plat. So we approved the resolution in the planning office, and we're required to report to the Planning Commission at the next meeting. Of the plat approval, and and there's a copy of it in the packet. So that plat was approved in December, and so that's all we have to report. If there's any questions, we could answer.
I don't have any questions. Commissioners, questions on this? This is one of those things that's handled within the department, okay. All right, moving on to item number 7, the adoption and submittal to the Planning Commission annual report for 2014 to the City Council.
Okay. In 2014, This isn't doing anything.
Is this an action item, too? I didn't see a resolution for this.
The resolution is within the annual report. It's like the second page of the annual report. So this is something that we produce every year. And so this past year in 2014, the Planning Commission met 10 times, and the report provides an overview of the activities that took place this year. Some of the highlights include the fact that the Platting Authority and Platting Board approved a total of 8 plats. The Planning Commission approved 3 variances, recommended 2 zone amendments to council, recommended several code changes after a healthy public process, and reviewed and discussed the 2014 land use inventory. The report also outlines some of the planning department goals for 2015. One of the exciting items that will very much involve the Planning Commission is to create a future land use plan to incorporate into the comprehensive plan. So staff is recommending approval of this, what is the resolution number? 2015-03 for approval. And then once you guys approve this tonight, then this, along with all of the other annual reports for various commissions that the city has, will be presented to the City Council on February 10th. So happy to answer any questions you might have. It's been a busy but good year.
February 10th, Tuesday. Okay. Commissioners, do you have any questions? If this is an action item, I probably should have called for a motion to approve the resolution, or do we do that after?
Yeah, after the start.
Okay. So, the commissioners, are there any questions about the report or comments about the annual report?
No.
So, I do believe I will be there when the report is presented on February 10th at 6 p.m.
That's why I made note of the date. Yes, 6 p.m. on February 10th. Yeah, thank you.
Remind me. Thank you.
I will.
I read through the report, but obviously not the first couple pages. I just kind of looked through it, and it's very similar to the reports in years past. And once again, it looks like a great summary, a great job. And council is usually pretty happy with the format, and so it looks good. Thanks for all the hard work putting it together. I will proudly present it at the meeting on your behalf or with you. So I need a motion to approve resolution 2015-3.
I'll make the motion to pass resolution 2015-3.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded. Discussion on the report? Further discussion? You guys will all be there too at the council meeting February 10th.
At the hospital again.
I believe I will be traveling for work, but it's exciting to look back and see that we have actually done a little bit of work around here. So thank you to the planning department.
Something was to happen to me between now and then, the vice chair would have to present it. So, whoever that would be, so. If there's no further discussion, all in favor of approving resolution 2015-3, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All
aye.
Opposed? Same sign. And it looks like the report is adopted and resolution is approved. On to the work session, staff presentation of the Unalaska Infill Development Analysis, which to me is an amazing piece of work. I love it. It's so interesting to me, having lived here for a very, very, very long time, and realizing who some of these property owners are and how much property they own, and it's like, wow, this is like an eye-opener. So it looks like a lot of work compiling this, and I like the photos, and I'm pretty sure not all the information is 100% accurate, but I know that you guys went to every source that you could, the registered owners and the people who pay the taxes and things. So if you look through here hard enough, like local people like myself, we can probably find a very small discrepancy or two, but overall it looks pretty good. And the idea is to get the information on the lots out there and see what could be done. So I think this is going to go a long way. I can imagine there might be a few people in the community that aren't too excited about people beating down their door and trying to buy, you know, make them offers for their lot, but it's public information already, and it's just compiling it and putting it out there, trying to alleviate or somehow address the housing situation in town. So I think it's a great thing, and I enjoyed looking through it. But commissioners,
I know that any of the BIA allotments will never be sold. There's only been a couple that did it.
Okay, well, let's let the staff go ahead and make their presentation, and then we'll make some questions and comments after that. So I kind of got ahead of myself there, okay. Too, but I just thought it was cool.
All right, so when we discussed the 2014 land use inventory, we did mention that one of our next steps would be to finalize an infill development analysis. And that analysis was originally motivated by a recommendation in our housing plan, which talked about putting together a study much like this that kind of highlighted opportunity, just different lots throughout the community that could be developed if people wanted to develop them. So this document has been created and is already up on our website, and Anthony has worked extremely hard on this, and I think it's just really kind of a cool and useful tool for the community. So he's going to review it with you right now, and we're happy to answer any questions after he goes through it.
Okay, so like Aaron said, this is kind of a follow-up from the land use inventory that we presented a couple months ago. So we mentioned last time we'd be looking a little bit more closely at the properties that we found that were in the category of vacant, and just kind of considering those to be something of interest to the community. So we went ahead and looked at 117 properties total that were found to be vacant in the original land use inventory. And then following up on that, we just wanted to get more information, so we investigate a little bit more details on each property. So the question we're trying to answer is, does this vacant land that was found in the land use inventory, does that translate into potential for development in the future? Specifically, what I'm calling here is infill development, which would be kind of like what it sounds, developing properties, filling in existing neighborhoods where there might be one or two vacant lots surrounded by already developed lots. So this would be completely different than, say, you know, expanding the road network to an undeveloped area, which would be a whole separate discussion. So looking at more of the characteristics of some of these properties, we focused on topography, which is probably everyone's favorite topic, and utilities, which is important for development, of course, zoning, the ownership, the lot size, and then various access issues, issues accessing the property from the street, or debris being kind of an obstruction in some cases. So topography and utilities were kind of put together as the focus in the analysis, at least in terms of trying to analyze what the data means. Those are usually the most of interest to developers. So I'll go ahead and show you some of the results. Basically, the methods, that's essentially the list I just gave. For things like topography, we used another windshield survey like we talked about last time, basically driving around. I mean, for topography, sometimes, you know, getting out of the car, not just looking through the windshield too, and just trying to gauge what the topography is like. And then a lot of the other stuff we just pulled out of city records, that was kind of the easiest way to do that. Utilities, we have all of that on file. And you can see the details there written out. So in the results, table one kind of shows us something that most people want to see, I think. The categories for topography, basically we split it out by flat land, hills, steep incline, or deep cliff. So that was kind of a judgment call in some cases, but we went out and looked at each property firsthand and decided which of those things we felt were appropriate. It can get a little complicated sometimes. For example, there could be a lot where there's enough flat land for a house, but it could still be the majority of the majority of the property is a cliff. So we tried to say if there is enough flat land for a building, we would consider it flat land. So you can see here the number of properties, 59 out of the 117 fit that category. And then the number of acres, that breaks down into 38. And then this category here, max housing units, that's based on the zoning. So it could be a lofty number, definitely considering, like the case I just mentioned, there might be only enough room for one house on a lot when, based on the size and the zoning, it could legally hold many more units than that. But so it can depend on the topography, but we did put max housing units as based on the zoning, how many housing units you could legally put on a property, and all of those that were in that category. And then figure one, we broke out the zoning there. Basically, almost three quarters of it is residential, and that's kind of some of the focus here is a lot of what people are concerned about is residential property, but this looks at everything. There's general commercial, there's also native allotment, and some industrial too. So there could be some of these lots definitely appropriate for other uses, not just housing necessarily. And then one more graph I put in here. Utility availability is the kind of thing we hear from developers as an issue. So it's important. Out of the three city utilities, you can see most have all three available in the right-of-way, main lines. And then the vast majority have two. Some only have one, and there's five. Five of these lots don't have any utilities. So this kind of confirms what you would expect with these potential infill lots would be on the road network, on the utility network, and they are mostly connected by utilities. So that's a positive factor in terms of development. So jumping ahead towards the appendix, just want to point out the maps give us a spatial view of what's going on here. So this is just all the vacant lots are shown there, and that's what we found from the land use inventory as the vacant lots. And then the purpose of this was to kind of refine that, so then map 2 is a refinement based on the data to show the topography, which is one of the easier ones to map. So I decided to map it here. So the darker the color, the flatter the land, according to our analysis. So you can kind of see most of that dark green is down in the valley. There's some in other locations out here. Also some on Mackinac as well. So the maps give you an idea, spatially, what we're talking about here. Overview. Then we included a list, so this is the address, the topography, and the utility situation with the three utilities, and this is just a list of everything, so without a ton of the details. So that's a quick reference. Then the rest of the document, which is by far the most number of pages, is a page by page listing of every property that we looked at. So each property gets its own page. So the first one would be an example, and the pages are ordered geographically, so that can help finding what you're looking for. We went from the end of the valley out through Mackinac, kind of sweeping through the city in the order of the pages. So starting at the end of the valley, all the information is given, all the information that we found is given, and then there's either an aerial photo like this one, or a photo we took on the ground, depending on whether we were able to attain a photo for each one. So you can page through every property, and you know, it's not meant to be a listing of properties that you want to go out and buy necessarily, but it's informational, as Stephen mentioned. So all those pages are there. That's 117 pages, one for each property. So that gets kind of lengthy, but you know, it's all there. It's all there. And the final section, you can read that in the packet. Just states a little bit about what the results mean and what the conclusions are. So in summary, the conclusion is that there may be some potential for infill development, and depending on where you're looking in the city, there could be some lots available. I would like to point out that our comprehensive plan mentions infill development as an important strategy. So this analysis here is kind of trying to accomplish that goal from the comprehensive plan. And the comp plan also basically, one of the strategies is to make a report just like this one, stating where there's land that could be developed and giving information about it. So finalizing this document is definitely a good thing in terms of accomplishing one of the goals from our comprehensive plan, which is always good. And the last thing I would mention is obviously this is still somewhat of a superficial look at each lot, because we're looking at every single lot in the city. So it's not meant to be an endorsement of a certain lot as being developable. If somebody wanted to build on a lot, I mean, they would have to invest a bit more time and money in determining from an engineer whether it's buildable, the characteristics of the surface, and more information about the utilities. So this is providing more of a broad overview for informational purposes. We're really excited about it, and it's up on the website, so the public is able to access it. It's a fairly large document, but you can download it as a PDF. And I will take any questions from the commissioners, or if anyone has any comments, we'd love to hear it.
Any comments or questions for staff, commissioners?
Well, I'd like to say something. I just don't know how anybody would not be able to praise the amount of work that has been put into this document. I think it's so amazing, and it's for somebody like me who's living here, who doesn't own property or a house, it's a great place to start or to just begin thinking. So I think this is a really wonderful opportunity. I mean, it's who's to say that the property owner will give up anything, but it's great to know that there is something out there, because we hear time and time again that housing is a problem. But in order to figure out a solution, I think this is a really great start. So thank you so much. I remember talking about this before when we had the preliminary maps and all, they were all really colorful. But this is very in-depth, and it makes a huge difference, I think, in at least understanding what we have and what it looks like.
Thank you. Commissioners, comments? Further comments? Questions?
Just have to say it's some great stuff. I mean, just to be able to look, just like Commissioner Tron is saying, is that even if some of these owners aren't looking to give it up, it's nice to see that there is possibly a possibility of there some development in the future.
Great, thank you, commissioners. I actually did have one question about access, and I was looking at the table, and I didn't see that column on access, but I did notice on the individual slides, on the individual pages, there is some access information on there. So if it's blank, does that mean there's, I'm just trying to figure it out, or is that something that we're going to keep working on, or?
We only recorded, for the access, we only wrote down things that seemed like maybe something of an obstacle to access. Most properties didn't really show any issues like that. So blank doesn't mean that we're not working on it or that we haven't worked on it. It means that we didn't find anything relevant, so.
Okay, that's kind of what I assumed by looking at the maps and the roads right next to the lot. So I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Is it possible to get a breakdown on the, like, is there a, as I noticed you had made some tables and graphs as far as who's got the utilities. And so we can safely assume that 95% of them will have access, or is there, do you have that number that we could spit out sometime? Or
I'd
be curious to know how many of them have access versus ones that do not.
Yeah.
So I see one of these is called a flagpole lot.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what that?
Well, I can definitely tell you what that is. That's a lot that looks like a flagpole where the only access to the street would be through a small strip of land, kind of like the pole, and then the lot itself would be the flag part. That's not necessarily an access issue unless there's an access easement there, which I think in these cases there are. So whenever a property is accessed through an easement or a flagpole, it's something that's kind of worth noting for most developers because it sort of affects the potential for building there.
Okay, I'm satisfied. Thank you. And any further questions or comments?
We have, if you're willing to take a comment from the public, we have one member of the public who's
absolutely
willing.
That was my next question.
Okay.
So public comments on any of the proceedings here tonight?
First, we have Jeff Hancock.
Okay. Thanks. Again, Jeff Hancock, for the record. I didn't intend to speak on this when I came in tonight, but after looking at it, the first thing that caught my eye, let me say, was the title, which has the word infill in it, which immediately made me say, what? What are they filling in? Because we've talked about infilling before in another meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. I know that this is the Planning Commission. What I notice here is that some of these lots are city-owned lots. And out of the 117, I haven't been through all the pages, but out of the 117 lots, could staff tell me how many are city-owned lots?
I don't have the number off the top of my head, but somewhere in the range of 5, maybe.
Okay. Okay. I'm guessing that those are the first lots that will probably go on the market as a result of this. Just because of everything that we've heard about opening up land for development of residential housing, the extensive needs for residential housing. I can tell you that one of these city-owned lots is next door to my own property on Haystack Hill. And it lists that there is a maximum number of 2 units, which I assume that's true for my own lot as well, which is also zoned single family resident or duplex residential. However, myself, my closest neighbor, which is actually on the other side of this lot, and our neighbors across the street and on around the side of the hill are all single family homes. That there may be a couple of rentals or like studio apartments within some of those houses. However, most of them are single family homes with single families occupying them. And I think that most of my neighbors would agree that we appreciate our green space, the spacing between our homes, We're not stacked up together. Most of us have yards that, you know, where we do things like mow the grass and plant flower beds and things like that. There's a lot of value in that type of property. And if one of these lots, like the one that's next door to my property, comes on the market for sale by the city, if they actually advertise that for sale, then you might as well strike it off this list, because it will be bought and there won't be any development on it. It'll be maintained as green space. And that's, you know, that's really the extent of my comments there. But I think that if there are other city-owned lots that certainly the adjacent landowners should be made well aware that the lot next door to them has been basically put out there as part of this analysis, and that it's essentially being put on the block for developers to look at and potentially buy and develop. So that's the extent of my comments there. Thank you.
Thanks.
Shall I speak to, or staff, would you like? Okay. I can say a few words to alleviate some of your concerns based on what actions we've taken in some previous meetings, where we've rezoned some of the lower haystack lots from went from single family to multifamily, and I will tell you that I made the comment, and I will stick to that, that I thought, I don't want this high density residential stuff creeping up the hill to, you know, so I, you know, I'm going to stick to my guns on that. So I was kind of, but I also know in Title 8, where it talks about single family residential, it is, I think it's written in code where you can have two units on there, like a lot of people do. So I think, and also I would also say at the city council meetings, that was one of the first things that people recommended, that the city sell those lots. And many of the landowners up there on Haystack got those lots, as you probably well know, for buying them from the city. So so if you know, anybody can buy those lots and do whatever they want to do with them. But I hope that alleviates some of your concerns, but I appreciate you bringing those points up to the board, to the staff.
Hi, just a short comment. I appreciate efforts to find more housing for people in the community, but I'm a little concerned about the infill approach being the only approach. Just because over time it seems like our town has gotten more and more crowded, and we live closer and closer together, and all the little spaces between our homes have been developed, and it changes the character of the place. It changes the way we kind of, our comfort level, it changes our lifestyle. So I hope that planning and zoning and others who are involved with this maybe understand that when people are asking for more houses, they're also asking for a place to live. They're asking to have more land opened up, and I know that that's not something you guys can just pull out of your pockets. I know that's something we have to work with OC and everybody else that's our landowners. But I think that when people say they want more housing, the hope is that some more land will open up. You know, I part of me doesn't want to see every undeveloped place covered with houses, but I also don't want to see us just get crammed up. And I mean, why live in Alaska if we're going to live like ants, really? So I hope it's not your only approach.
Thank you.
And once again, thank you for those thoughtful comments. And I can speak to that as well. It's not the job of planning and zoning to encourage development. That's not our job. It's we are to make sure that any development proceeds responsibly and orderly and according to code and in alignment with a comprehensive plan and with the city code of ordinances. So we're not pro-development or anti-development, but we are tasked with keeping
track of the different lots and the way that they're zoned and that kind of information. And so staff does their work and compiles the report, probably at the request of the city council or city manager as well, because they're going to want to look at this, right? And so I've been a victim of this too. When it's time for the comprehensive plan, for comments on the comprehensive plan, that's when we got to speak up. Everybody has to, because it's over and over. I've been learning over the past couple of years that everything boils down to the comprehensive plan. And it's like the comprehensive plan says this, so we need to do this because that's what the community wants. And I didn't fill out anything on the last comprehensive plan survey. I wish I would have. And I definitely will next time, and I will encourage every person that has lived here for a number of years to do that, because that is absolutely critical. That's what guides everything, you know, for the city. And most of this, you know, housing crisis and all the work that's been done to try to alleviate it, most of that stuff is a direct result of that. It was, I think, the number one issue in the comprehensive plan. But maybe for you it's not, and you know, other people, they have other priorities. And I just would say everybody has got to take that very, very seriously. It's a very powerful document, as I'm learning. And another thing I would notice too, I've made the same observations as you, but what I notice is that where there used to be houses, there aren't. And where there were not houses, there are. I've noticed a lot of that too. But, you know, when Alyeska builds a big apartment building, that makes me feel closed in too. And, you know, I'm right there with you. But again, it's not our task to be pro-development or anti-development. It's to provide the information and let it make sure it proceeds responsibly, I would say. But I do hear you, and I'll try to be sensitive to that. Commissioners, any comments? And then staff might have a thing to say.
Just a couple things I wanted to add, and I'm trying not to turn this into a back and forth, but it's useful information and very relevant. So there's a lot of stuff going on with housing and different, more than just this, in response to comprehensive plans. And I'm not sure, in early December, there was a housing meeting, a big discussion there. And so staff is having quite a few follow-ups in this past council meeting and then this next council meeting, with council kind of presenting different parts of those ideas. So this is not the only thing that's going on. Lots of other ideas are flying around. The other thing I just wanted to echo what Stephen was saying is really be on the lookout for those opportunities to participate in the comprehensive planning process. That land use plan that I was referring to earlier in this meeting, that's going to be a huge opportunity for us to, that would have an impact on how some of these lots could be developed. I'm a firm believer that it's not a one-size-fits-all in development. I mean, you need to, we don't want to live in Alaska so we all can be crammed in. I mean, we want to have our space, right? So you need to have kind of a little bit of everything. So we have to have these land use planning conversations so we can start identifying as a community where we want, you know, these open spaces to go and where, you know, we feel like it makes more sense to have a denser development and, you know, or where we want these single family homes to go. So that's an important discussion. So certainly I encourage you to be on the lookout for those, and we'll make it known when we start that process. But okay, I'll be done.
Thank you. I had a question for staff based on how you guys gathered different properties or areas for infill. I looked through the packet, but I had a question about maybe some that I didn't see in the packet. We often talked about the work camps, and I was wondering if those are in here because they're not in here because they're occupied right now. Is that something that you guys kind of left out of the analysis? Or, yeah, I wasn't sure, because there's an area over where Knick used to be, and it's kind of flat, and then there's the housing that's kind of by the S-curves.
And one of the issues with doing this kind of thing is, especially with temporary things like that, it's kind of always in flux. So most of what we do is a snapshot, and one problem with a snapshot is if you take a snapshot and then you spend a few months processing the data, by the time you finalize it, things are different already. So that's definitely an issue. But the way we came about figuring out which properties to start with was when we drove around and did the land use inventory originally. And that's property by property. So if any property is excluded from here, it would be because we assigned that property some kind of use originally, residential, commercial, industrial, something like that. So, you know, there are some, and there's also issues of some lots are so big, some properties are so big, there could be a lot of vacant land on a property, but we still assigned it a use because 50% of it was being used, but so we there were some things that maybe weren't quite captured too.
Thank you. Yeah.
If there are no further comments, then I will look at my agenda one more time and make sure that it is time for number 9 adjournment. I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 7:42. I'll call the meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission for the City of Unalaska to order. It is 7:43. Can I have a roll call, please?
Earnshaw? Gregory?
Here.
Santana?
Here.
Tron?
Here.
Williams?
Here.
We have a quorum. Oh, my bad. And Planning Director, I'm here. I think our acting city manager is here as well. So we certainly have a quorum.
There we go. Excellent. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the Historic Preservation Commission meeting from December 18th, 2014?
I'd like to say that you actually have corrected minutes that went out in email and then are in front of you right now.
I'll make a motion to pass the minutes for December 18 Historic Preservation Commission.
May I have a second, please?
I'll second that motion.
Excellent. Discussion on the minutes, commissioners?
Do we want to note the area that was changed a little bit from the first version of the minutes to the second?
Absolutely. Staff, can you enlighten us, or would you like me to speak to that? Or?
We made some changes to, I think it was paragraph 5 of item 5 to kind of clarify.
My mic isn't on. We made changes to paragraph 5 of item 5 to clarify kind of what all happened.
And I will speak to that, too. So I had read the minutes pretty thoroughly, and the original minutes did not reflect what I thought happened at the meeting, and so I wanted to make it very, very clear that we did have an accurate record of what did happen at the meeting for a number of reasons. And so staff was kind enough to revisit the minutes and revise them and make them more accurate, and so I guess they're about as accurate as they're going to be, but I just wanted to make it very clear for the record that at the last meeting, any individual that made an attempt to speak was recognized the very first time that individual made an attempt to speak. Despite erroneous KUCB radio report,
every individual that made attempt to speak was allowed to speak the first time when they went through the established channels to speak at the meeting. And I want that noted for the record. So I will quote the KUCB radio report. As said, Mr. Hancock made several attempts to speak before he was recognized. That is not factually correct, and I wanted to make sure that the minutes reflected that. But more importantly, I wanted to make sure that everybody in this community knows that their comments are valued and considered by this board. And I encourage people to come to the meeting and speak. And I will let those people speak. I'm not letting you speak. I'm going to the procedures. So the meeting will occur the way it's supposed to occur. And comments are expressed. And everybody gets to say what they're going to say. And there was also some confusion about how the comments are actually presented, the order that they're presented. So I checked with staff. And I checked with the city council. I was at the meeting, and I watched how they do it and several times. And so I made sure that the way that's going to proceed is if the public wants to speak to a business item, they fill out a card, and they're recognized, and they can speak. If it's a public hearing, all you have to do is raise your hand and be called upon to speak. And that is the way I was told it was done. That is the way it's going to be objectively done. And I hope everybody can live with that. I am not up here to tell people what they can do or what they can't do. I'm here to make sure the meeting is run like it's supposed to be run, that there's no confusion, that there's no hard feelings, that everybody feels like they get a chance to speak and what they say is valued. So I'm pretty adamant about that. And I want to make sure that that occurs. And so that's basically all I had to say about the minutes. And thank you, staff, for revising the minutes to more accurately reflect what actually took place in the meeting. Is there any other discussion or comments on the minutes? No. Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes as revised, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. All right. Next item is the business item number 3. It's the adoption and submittal of the Historic Preservation Commission annual report for 2014 to the City Council. And this is an action item. So can I have a motion
to
approve?
Or staff you will do the presentation first.
Okay, my mistake. Staff, please.
Okay. So the structure of this annual report is based on the one that we had put together for the Planning Commission. And it's been altered slightly to meet the need for the annual report that we also have to submit to the state every year. So in 2014, the Historic Preservation Commission met 4 times. A lot of time was really taken to review historic preservation documents and really kind of get our feet on the ground. Historic Preservation Commission also passed 3 resolutions related to the CMMP and a Section 106 review. I would like to point out, due to your added role here, that the code requires the Historic Preservation Commission to meet 2 times a year. So unless anything time sensitive comes up, like if we get a letter for a Section 106 review, I think it's really fine if we go ahead and make it a practice to have the Historic Preservation Commission meet maybe 3 times a year, maybe January, primarily to review the annual report for the council and state, and then May and September. So every 4 months, and I think that that'll help conversations going as we move forward doing kind of inventory projects that'll still allow for some touch base with everybody. And of course, if anything timely comes up, we can pull together another meeting. But I think that that'll be good, and we'll make that known to the public of, you know, this is the schedule of everybody meeting. So the annual report also outlines some goals for 2015. And like I just mentioned, the main item is to update the Unalaska inventory of historic sites and resources, as we've previously discussed. City will have to hire an outside consultant to complete that survey, and we'll coordinate closely with SHPO to make sure that all the requirements are met. And again, once this gets approved tonight, this will be shared with the City Council at the February 10th meeting. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Commissioners, any questions for staff? Comments?
We do have one member of the public who has signed up to speak on this item.
Excellent.
Jeff Hancock. If the commission has any comments or questions for staff, we'd be happy to answer those. If there aren't any, if you're willing to move to a...
Wanted to make sure, so commissioners, no comments or questions for staff on this? Okay, excellent. There are none, so...
And I would like to clarify that this is an action item, and yes, the resolution is 2015-1.
01?
Yep.
Yep, got it right here.
Again, commissioners, honorable chair, I have a quick procedural question prior to the comments that I intended to make about this. The first question is asking whether or not the assistant city manager is here in a voting capacity.
He's the acting city manager, and so in the past when we've had the acting city manager, when Jamie was the city manager, he did come and vote.
Okay.
So.
The next question I would like to ask is whether or not Commissioner Laddick had an unexcused absence or an excused absence.
That is an excused absence because he is at a conference. However, I think the way that's all worded is it's the city manager, not Chris Laddick. So right now, Patrick Jordan is the city manager.
Okay. At the last meeting, I believe that Chris Laddick had an unexcused absence at this meeting. It's clear that you have a quorum without the voting members that are staff members, but I would like to make clear that at the last meeting, there was a question about whether the city manager, Commissioner Laddick, was excused or absent, unexcused, and I believe that that was not reflected in the minutes. And typically, I would say that with a board or a commission or a city council or whatever, if there is need to excuse yourself from a meeting, you would do so by contacting the chair and asking to be excused from that meeting. So that's the procedural question and comment that I had related to that. This was the first opportunity to do that.
I can answer that question for you, and the answer is no.
Nope.
I was not contacted by the city manager.
Thank you.
Or the acting city manager.
Thank you. The quick comment that I have regarding the annual report, and I assume this is a draft annual report until you approve it, that in the introduction, the first paragraph in the introduction, the last line states that the integration of the two commissions allows the city to better maintain active membership in the Historic Preservation Commission. I'll give you a second to read that if you want. The integration of the two commissions allows the city to better maintain active membership in the Historic Preservation Commission. I appreciate the fact that this commission has been reestablished after being inactive for many, many years. However, many, many years went by without any active solicitation from the city for active participation in the commission, which they were required by ordinance to maintain. The city council was required by the city ordinance to maintain an active commission, and they failed to do so. So it wasn't a failure on any part of past membership of the commission to be active. In fact, there were vacant seats. The last time that there were vacant seats advertised, which was some 5 or 6 years ago, there were vacancies advertised and there were applications on file with the clerk's office that went ignored. No reappointments were made. No city members were even contacted to be asked if they were interested in being reappointed to this commission. And so I would dispute the fact that the integration of the two commissions serves to better maintain active participation. I think that should be stricken from this annual report. I don't think it's necessary. And I think in a legal sense, this would be something where an attorney would say that this assumes facts, not in evidence. So that's the comment that I have about that. Thank you.
Okay, staff, can you, when we say integration, are we talking about the resolution that was passed by the city council the night, or the first, no, I guess not, because it was a first reading, is that right?
No.
So there was a resolution to integrate, maybe that's not the right word, to combine, to move the HPC to planning and zoning from parks, culture, and recreation, is that? That's not what we're talking about here, is it?
No, it's not. And honestly, yeah, this was in reference to the fact that the membership of the Planning Commission would mirror the membership of the Historic Preservation Commission. Integration probably is not the correct word. And frankly, the sentence doesn't necessarily need to be there from staff's perspective.
Any other comments about the annual plan from the HPC other than, is anyone else signed up to speak to that or? Okay,
no
so.
More members of the public, no. No more members
of the public. Excellent, so can I have a motion to approve resolution 2015-01? The adoption of the historical.
Make a motion to adopt resolution 2015-01.
Second.
I'll second that motion.
Discussion, commissioners?
I have something I can do. So okay.
Go ahead, Ms. Trent.
Well, I was just wondering if, because staff mentioned that last sentence doesn't necessarily need to be there, would we remove that in order to move forward, or is that?
You guys can vote to remove that sentence. You can kind of amend your existing motion to remove that sentence and vote on that amendment and move forward, and staff would be happy to remove it before we present it to council.
Okay, well, I just, I think that I don't really have a problem with the sentence. I do see that we are doing, we are more active than we were when this commission didn't exist or wasn't active. So I personally don't have an issue with the sentence, but I do appreciate public member Jeff Hancock holding accountable what didn't happen previous to this commission coming to work.
Thank you for those comments. And so I wouldn't necessarily agree or disagree with that statement. I would say that it doesn't need to be in there, that's for sure. I don't have any problem striking that from this report. And so I'm going to move to amend the original motion to amend the document to strike the last sentence in the first paragraph on page 3. So I will call for a motion to amend the resolution to adopt.
You just need a second.
Yeah.
I'll second that motion.
I didn't know if I could make the motion, so I can't. So it's motioned and seconded to amend the resolution to adopt the annual report as amended.
Just a point of order. The first vote would be voting on the amendment, whether to strike it, and then voting again on approving the entire thing.
So I will call for a vote on the proposed amendment. All in favor of aye. The amendment, say aye.
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 All opposed. So the amendment passes, and we'll go ahead and, if there is no further discussion on the report, comments, any comments from the commissioners? So I'll call for a vote to adopt the resolution 2015-01 as amended. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
Aye.